Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners and poisoning cases from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 44!
Bodivar. I still haven't worked out what the bingo calls are. I said I was going to do that and I lied.
Maybe sometime way into the future we'll have a bingo call from you and it will be entirely random and make no sense.
Absolutely. And everyone will have forgotten about it and go, what the hell is he doing?
44, who's at the door? I think that is one, actually. Who's is at the door? It might not be for 44. I'm just making that up.
Who's at the door? Six.
How are you, Nick?
I'm all right. Bumbling along.
Beautiful brain, you see. That's bobbing along, sorry.
Bobbing along,
yeah. It's the week before Christmas.
Did you know they're making... I'm going to interrupt you now.
Okay.
They're making that into a stage musical, and I cannot wait.
Bedknobs and Broomsticks?
Yeah, and it's coming to our local theatre next year.
Oh, that's very exciting.
Which is so very exciting. When I read that, and I thought, ooh, that's exciting.
That's very good. I'm going to have to break something to you, Nick.
Yes.
I don't think Angela Lansbury will be in it.
Yeah, she will.
She's about 900.
Yeah.
She'll turn up.
One of the things I'm very happy about, I saw Angela Lansbury on stage and it's one of the happiest things I've ever done. I was so pleased to see her live.
What was she in?
It was great. I saw her in Blythe Spirit, Madame Arcadie.
Oh, that's amazing. Yes, that would be
incredible. She was stunning. She walked on stage and she had like a 10-minute standing ovation just for walking on stage. and everyone else, you can see all the other actors going, can we get on the fucking plane now?
Was it just you standing up? Everyone else was like, can we get on with the plane?
No, no, no.
It was just you clapping.
No.
More Angela! More! Do Jessica Fletcher!
Sing the songs!
Oh, well, that's a lovely story. But none of that happened this week.
Not this week, no. That was some time ago.
But the warm memories of that are keeping you through the horror of working in retail at Christmas.
That they are.
Well, any poisonings this week?
No, well, I mean, I'd be so bloody busy. They could have been death all around me. I just wouldn't have noticed.
So just negligent poisoning could have happened.
Probably. Could have been. God knows. I could be dead. Don't know.
Oh, my God.
Just too busy to not worry about that sort of stuff.
If you were a ghost. Ghosts don't really come through on Zoom chats, do they?
How do you know?
Well, I don't. That's why I asked.
You just you make such assumptions about the spirit world. And I think that's very presumptuous of you.
Well, isn't there a thing like, oh, the ghosts don't show up on cameras? And oh, no, they do, because people keep taking pictures of ghosts, don't they?
Yeah, well, exactly.
They don't show up in real life. Yeah. Maybe this is the only way you can see ghosts.
Through Zoom.
Are you dead?
It's when your door opens very creaky behind you, very slowly.
That is a constant terror.
And I go,
One of these days you're going to do this on the Zoom screen. I can see my door right there, like Paranormal Activity. My eyes keep going to it. One day it's going to open and there's going to be a figure standing there, probably Ben,
and it'll be your husband.
Yes, going, would you like more chips? Get out, you horrible beast, you demon from the darkness. Well, before we continue any more of our paranormal investigations, I think it's very important that we thank our new Patreon subscribers.
Indeed we should. They are ever delightful people, so thank you so much to Maria
and to Lee Radka. Thank you so much, you guys. You're very sexy. Very, very sexy.
You're delightful people. There's been a lot of excitement over on Patreon.
It has.
This week.
Yeah, we got festive.
We got festive. Mm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the festiveness, there's no way of stopping Sinead with the festive things on Patreon, really. I've tried, I begged her, but no. It's festive all the way through.
Well, festive with darkness, though. Not a happy festive.
Oh, no. No, it's a very miserable festive, so you'll be fine.
Exactly. Well, Nick.
Hello.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison?
Ooh, that's an excited thing going on there. It's exciting.
We could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
No, you got me going with that first one.
Yeah, go with the first one. Yay, hooray. Well,
that's,
it is...
That's really frightening.
You've heard me being excited before.
Yeah, there's excited and there's that.
This is how I love. Well, it's your story this week, Nick. Hooray, hooray, hooray.
It is.
But we can't possibly tell a story without a cocktail in hand.
God, no. Absolutely not.
Well, as you know, every week we pick a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell and will flavour our cocktail of the week. Nick's story, so he got to choose the secret ingredient. And Nick,
yeah.
This week's secret ingredient is...
Is salad.
Salad.
Salad, yes.
It's so close to Christmas, and you're putting salad on the table.
Absolutely.
Okay, so salad? What kind of salad?
Well, we'll find out, won't we?
Oh, it's a particular kind of salad you have in mind?
Yeah, it is a very particular type of salad.
Please let it be Greek salad. Please let it be Greek salad, because I love a Greek, love a Greek salad. Yeah, a lot of people have been very angry about this.
Well, understandably so. I mean, to be honest, I'm right there with you. If someone said, surprise, it's a salad, I'd be going, what the fuck is that? I'd be very annoyed.
Even if it was
not a good surprise.
Like a dinner party, if someone brought out salad as the main course.
Well, no. Well, unless it was you, then I would go, no, fuck it.
My salads are delicious.
If it was anyone like normal, then I'd be going, that's lovely, thank you so much.
Okay, someone who's normal, thank you, cut me deep. B, if it was me making a salad, you know the goddamn well that salad would have good stuff in it. That would have all kinds of cheese and meats and a delicious dressing and probably a roast underneath it.
There would probably actually be very little salad involved.
Yes.
And it would more be like, salad? It's very much like a charcuterie plate, really.
That is a salad, isn't
it? But Sinead calls it a salad.
Yes, they put grapes on it and a sprinkle of parsley.
It's a salad.
That's good. Okay, people, that is a salad now. Okay, so with salad, I'm thinking, have you done Pimm's? Have you done, like someone suggested, like a Bloody Mary with celery in it, which I'd be happy with, but I know you don't like that, so it can't be that. I'm really, really quite intrigued about what the hell salad is going to go on in this club.
We shall find out.
Okay, well, with salad as your ingredient.
Salad.
What have you come up with, Nick?
Well, you are correct in that we have gone for a very specific type of salad.
Right.
On this one. And we have gone for a fruit salad.
Oh, for God's sake. How did I know?
Just because you
did
got
I
the picture
know?
Wrong. My fault.
You just said salad.
You just
assumed.
You made an assumption.
I asked you several times, going, is this picture all right? And you said yes.
Yeah, I went with it. I thought, no, that's where she's going with that. Fine.
God damn it, Nick. Okay, we had people on tenterhooks there, but it's fruit salad.
Fruit salad.
Is that the name of the cocktail then?
That is the name of the cocktail. Is
It's a fruit salad. Oh, okay. Yes. Well, that's quite exciting then. That's more promising than I thought I was going to have to go down and chop up lettuce and an onion and some radishes.
You still might.
Well, I need a snack. You know, a sad. So that's not a good salad, actually.
It's really not.
That's a bad salad. As ever, because we're in isolation, Nick has delivered me a little bottle of cocktails. And bless, we had a tweet earlier with someone going, I want Nick to deliver me little bottles of cocktails. You all do. Maybe that is a 2021 thing. We will start a cocktail delivery service. Literally with Nick on an old-timey bicycle. He's frowning right now.
Yes, as I write to you my penny farthing delivering cocktails left and right.
You're telling me people would not pay for that. It's in the works. We'll get a 5-year plan sorted out.
It'll keep me in top hats and pipes. It'll be fine.
I want votes on this episode. Who would pay for that? And start putting biddings out now, because that's what the Patreon money will go towards. It'll be great. But Nick has delivered me my secret ingredients, a little mixture. So it's time for us to go to our isolation kitchens and shake up a storm. See you in a minute.
I'll see you in a bit.
Ah. And we're back.
Hello.
Ooh, a fruit salad, eh, Nick?
Fruit salad.
Fruit salad. So, as I said, I'm very relieved that I do not have just some green shit in a glass that I have to then drink vodka through. It is a stunning looking cocktail.
I mean, it's an amazing colour.
Yeah.
It's brilliantly pink. I love it.
It is. It's proper. When you say fruit salad, 100% you get this from the colour. Mm. How they have done it, how you have done it, I don't know. I think it looks like a pink grapefruit.
Let's go with that,
yes. But, beautiful as it is, what happened last time? We moved away from the brown drinks.
We did move away from the brown drinks into the delightfully looking drinks.
Yeah, we went crimson.
Bad cocktail.
But not a good cocktail. So,
I have slightly higher hopes for this, mainly because it doesn't have port in it.
So we've got to taste it first now, haven't we?
Of course, that's the rules.
That's the new rules. The new rules. They've all changed. Okay, right. So we're going to dive into the very, very beautiful fruit salad. Cheers.
Yes. Mm. Cheers.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. That is not what I was expecting. This is the problem. Fruit salad. So I was expecting a fruity, sweet explosion in my mouth. But it's kind of, yeah, it's nice. It's not bad, but I don't know what to make of it.
Go on again.
Oh, yeah, second sip, more flavours, getting more.
What are you getting?
I'm getting, okay, full disclosure, I know some of the ingredients.
You know two of the ingredients.
I know two of the ingredients. I know there's orange juice in there. I know there's vodka.
Yes.
So I'm getting that. It's the beautiful colour, I'm thinking grenadine.
There is some grenadine in there.
The rest of the stuff, it has got a bitterness to it. Maybe that's just me. It's got a slight bitterness that I'm afraid of. I'm wondering whether this is the one you've hidden bloody chartreuse in or
it's
something
not,
like that.
I guarantee there is no chartreuse.
I'm glad, because I think I can detect chartreuse at 20 paces.
Well, indeed, yeah, and you're always wrong.
It's interesting, it's a grower. I want to know what's in it.
It's not based on a fruit salad as you would expect.
No,
but it is based on, do you remember Penny Chu sweets, fruit salad?
Oh, God, right.
Those little, yeah, your Penny sweets you had when you were a kid.
Well, I don't really remember them. I know they existed, but I don't think I had them. A deprived childhood. All we had was pate.
So in this, yeah, so you've got the vodka and the orange and grenadine, as Sinead has correctly surmised. Ooh. You also have Galliano.
Oh,
in there, which has got some of the sort of slightly vanilla-y, little bit of herby-ness going in there. And you've also got an ingredient that we have never used on this podcast.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
Before, which is a banana liqueur. That I had to buy especially for this drink.
What?
And I think it's actually really nice.
I would not in a million years have guessed banana.
Smell it now and you'll go, that's fucking, it's fucking banana.
Okay, I'm doing it. No, I can't smell anything. Oh, okay. And this is the thing that's worrying me more, that I have COVID. Because I've got a cough at the moment. Okay, right.
But I have to say, it really does remind me of those sweets that I had when I was growing up. I always used to go to the newsagent's little corner shop and buy penny sweets, we used to call them.
Penny sweets on your penny farthing, basically.
And this tastes exactly like I remember those sweets tasting. And actually, the garnish suggestion is actually one of those little sweets on a
really
stick. And unfortunately, I couldn't get any in time.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's not a sophisticated cocktail. It's nothing fancy. But it does sort of take you down memory lane type cocktail of something. It's really quite bizarre.
Okay, so that's, well.
I think it's impressed me more than it has you.
It has. I'm not going to. Because I don't remember those fruit salad sweets. I'm not going to lie. So for the nostalgia element, then yes, you're getting all of this. It's quite nice. It's just kind of, yeah, I'm just really intrigued that there's banana and Galliano in there. And when you say fruit salad, I think I was gearing myself up for a fresh, citrusy taste of grapes and grapefruit and apple and pears. But none of that. It's a really interesting combination of flavours, to be honest. When you sip it, and now you've told me everything that's in it, I'm going, yeah, I can get all of that right now.
But I do have to apologise to our lovely listeners, because I've not made one that's going to be easy to replicate. It's got things that are a bit obscure. Potentially people might have a bottle of Galliano lurking in the back of the cupboard. I bought a bloody bottle of banana liqueur just for this. I'm never going to use it again. It's going to sit in my cupboard. I mean, it looks lovely in the cupboard, but
Oh, you have to share a picture of the banana liqueur. What else can you use banana liqueur with?
I have no idea. I'm sure there must be a lot of sort of like tiki cocktails out there with sort of like coconut, banana. I'm sure there'd be some quite interesting ones. make. I've no idea what they're called, but I'm sure I'll damn give it a go.
Oh yeah, get some like Appleton's coconut rum.
Yeah,
and then some banana coconut liqueur, rum. and then coconut milk. And then just leave me alone with that.
And then, and then leave the room while Sinead does her own thing.
Can't imagine drinking banana liqueur in many things.
I'm thinking now creme de cacao, chocolate banana.
Oh my God.
I think that could be chocolate banana coconut. Ooh. That is a winning combination.
Wow, that could work.
So that is like a dessert in a glass, basically. So
that's I think just there's summer a in a bowl.
Yeah. I think there's quite a few things that we could potentially make with this.
So we need to do a video on this, obviously. You need to bring the banana liqueur and we're going to try it with different combinations of stuff. Because that is the tradition at Christmas. The Christmas banana. We should have those. Because we can only get together over Christmas, obviously. I think there's a couple of our listeners out there will have a bottle of banana liqueur because they've done the same sort of thing. Probably not for cocktails, definitely not for a poison cocktail related podcast, but they will have had or been gifted a banana liqueur because they like bananas and it's sat in the back of the cupboard and they have no idea what to do with it.
If you have, give this a go.
Some shots of it and then tell us what you have made. Banana shots. Oh, that sounds sad.
Yeah, that really is. God, no, that sounds quite depressing.
If you've got nothing, it's the sort of thing that you'd find at the back of your parents' cupboard, you know, the drinks cabinet that parents had. But the sort of thing that your parents have a drinks cabinet and they'll get gifted things or have something fancy that they cook with. And there's all the stuff that they use normally at the front, you know, the gin and the vodka and the sherry and the crying juice and everything, all of that. And then at the back are all the liqueurs that they bring out once a year at Christmas. And that's the stuff that you nick to do shots with your friend.
You say that, I'm going to go off on a slight tangent. This may not make it into the podcast. But I remember when I was about 10 or 11 or so, my dad and a friend of his, who was actually my godfather, he has since passed away.
Not my godfather.
But I distinctly remember them, I think it was one Christmas, sitting and deciding they had exactly the same this cabinet that had not been gone through at the back for years, and that they were going to drink anything that had less than about a third of the bottle in was a waste of space, and they were just going to drink it. And I remember, about 10, 11, just watching them and thinking it was so funny as they got absolutely slaughtered. And it's one of my most vivid memories of childhood, of just watching my dad get absolutely pissed, and it was so funny.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love the parents' drinks cabinet. My parents had, they had a decanter set. You know, all the parents had a decanter set from a certain generation. Oh, yeah, they had the decanter set with their whiskey and their sherry. They didn't even bloody drink sherry or port, really. My dad had a whiskey every now and then. My mum had a drinking problem, so she'd steal the liquor every now and then. But then they have the shameful, shameful booze hidden away in a cupboard. But then when people come around, oh, yes, try our lovely aged port. It's been here 20 years.
It's very well aged.
Well, with the fruit salads firmly in hand, I will let you off on the fruit salad business because there was a good story. Good story behind it. What a journey we've gone on. But you know what? We've got our fruit salads firmly in hand to carry on down the journey because there's a story coming as well.
I mean, we've already been going half an hour. There's still a story to come.
This is the longest preamble. We've just been having fun.
Absolutely. It's been a jolly time. So.
It's lockdown. Please let us have this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Right, so story time.
Story time.
Story time. So after last week's jaunt around Bavaria, we are not going far at all. We are sticking in the Germanic counties.
Okay.
And we are going to the city of Bremen.
Ooh.
To meet Gesche Gottfried, the last person to be publicly beheaded in the city.
Oh.
And on her birthday, no less. So
oh, good God.
That was lucky for her.
Oh, that's not a good birthday.
It's not a good birthday. Happy birthday, kajunk.
Did she get presents beforehand?
Not that I'm aware of.
Someone handing out things like, here's a hat. Oh, God.
Here's this book. You must read it. Oh, shit. Gesche was born in Bremen in 1785. Bremen is a prosperous city in northern Germany. And while the city itself is thriving, Gesche, her twin brother Johann Jr. and her parents live in fairly meagre conditions. Her father makes a modest income as a tailor, and it is just enough for the four of them to get by on. It's a hard life. It's not an easy life. It is reported, or it is spoken about by sort of the locals, that Gesche's brother, Johann Jr., is in fact, he is the apple of his parents' eye. They both dote upon him. He is the golden child. They pretty much leave Gesche to make do for herself.
Oh, bloody hell. That is really favouritism.
That is really favouritism, absolutely. Yeah.
Shall have all the clothes and food. You go and hunt.
Yeah, pretty much. You go and do what you like. And also potentially thinking, well, this is the male child. He is the one who's going to support us in our old age. The daughter we're going to marry off to someone.
She'll be someone else's problem. The boy, he is what we will pin all our hopes and dreams on.
And it is later speculated, much later, that perhaps this emotional deprivation at such a young age is part of the reason for her future misdemeanours, her future criminal ways.
Oh, that's sad.
But right now, she is still a young child, and despite all this, the poverty and the pretty harsh conditions surrounding her, there is one thing that she loves.
Oh, okay.
Above all other things, performing. She has such great ambitions of making life on the stage.
Is she little orphan Annie?
Potentially. Every night and day, it's a hard not life. Or, in German, obviously.
No, it's the 1780s. It could be Angela Lansbury.
That's true. She would have been a young child at the time.
She would have just been a slip of a thing. No, as far as I know, she didn't kill anyone.
No.
Oh, lovely. Oh, yes, she has ambitions. Yes.
But she has such ambitions. Now, the theatre scene in Bremen is booming at this time. And while Gesche, I mean, she is not in a position to go and see anything fancy, but she would have seen buskers and players out on the street and in squares, taverns if she was there with her parents or whatever. So she would have seen these people, these performers throughout the city. And no doubt to a young girl, this looked incredibly glamorous.
You were just street performers.
Well, it's better than the life she's got at the moment. She's there. People are watching, enraptured by what they're doing. People are throwing money at them. She's a fairly miserable life as it is. So to see these people who are so
getting attention. Oh, God.
And she is convinced that she is going to be a star.
Yes.
These dreams, however, were not to be.
Oh, aren't they all shattered in front of us?
Gesche's father is not exactly overly enthusiastic about his daughter's ambitions for the stage. He is not overly supportive of this and decides that the best thing to do is to marry her off young. Make her someone else's problem.
Just let her go to the stage.
No.
Just let her go off in a travelling troupe.
Yeah, get her out of the house. Someone else can deal with her. Not my issue anymore.
Is she just being very annoying, practising various lines badly in the house?
She could well be tap dancing at all hours of the night. who knows?
Juggling everything.
Juggling everywhere.
Juggling her parents. She's incredibly strong.
Potentially, she was an incredibly precocious and annoying child as well. We don't know. So he decides, yeah, the best thing to do, get her out of my hair, get rid of her, get her married. And to that end, he marries her off to a young saddler, a chap called Johann Mittelberg.
Oh, great name. And yep. Also saddled her up.
Oh, ha, ha, ha.
Saddled her with a husband.
Like now, he is also not overly keen, or in fact supportive, of his young bride's ambitions.
No, she must stay at home, surely. Well,
precisely. He does everything he can to make sure that she stays home like the good little wife that she is supposed to be.
Goddamn patriarchy.
Not long after they're married, Johann actually receives an inheritance from his father. And being rather bored of this work nonsense, I mean, who wants that? He does his utmost now to sample all the entertainment options that Bremen has to offer. Drinking, whoring, gambling, all the classics.
In that order.
In that order, absolutely.
And you went to whoring very quickly. There were tours, there were city guides, there was a puppet show, but you went to whoring second.
Second, yeah, drink, fancy a shag, and then bet on something.
I mean, that is our want as well. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing I like better than a drink and a shag and then to gamble.
That's how life works. So, I mean, he would much rather be in the alehouse, brothel, gambling dens or whatever, than at home with his new wife, playing happy families. Not interested in any of that. And unsurprisingly, Gesher is not too keen on her husband's new pastimes. And again, it is like when she was a child with the local community gossip around. What a poor, rotten life Gesher has to be married to such a man. I mean, everyone feels so terribly sorry for her.
Well, damn right.
Yeah, she's lumbered with this drunken, gambling, whore-mongering chap.
Yes. Well, yeah, I mean, she wants to be off drinking and gambling and shagging. Yeah.
But what a miserable life it is that she is forced to be at home looking after such a man as this. However, she is not destined to endure this neglect for too long.
Oh, surely not.
In 1813, somewhat soon after Mittelberg admits that they are now, in fact, completely destitute, the inheritance that they were supposed to live off comfortably for the rest of their lives has been frittered away to nothing.
Oh, bloody hell.
Whores will have their trinkets, as they say.
What kind of trinkets? I bought you this case of gold. A bracelet would have been fine.
The debt collectors are closing in.
The debt collectors are outside the house, like, oh, we're coming.
Yeah. Every day they're a step closer. He looks at the window, they freeze. And then he closes the window, they move a bit closer.
That is the law of the debt collector.
That's how debt collectors work. If you catch them moving, they have to go away. By this point, Gesher and Johann, actually, they have three children.
Now, well, that happened.
That happened. Young family together. They're going to get with the shagging.
You don't have to explain procreation. It's fine.
This is how children happen, people. Now, I don't know when the children were born. I don't know how old they are at this point. But I think we can assume that they are still pretty young. And obviously entirely reliant on their parents. I mean, Gesher is furious. How could her husband have literally gambled their future and the future of their children away?
Damn straight.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's appalling. In October that year, Johann Mittelberg dies of an agonizing, inexplicable illness. The ever-loving and dutiful wife is at his side throughout his horrible ailments, nursing him better as best she could, but not even her loving attention can save him.
Oh, how convenient.
The locals gossip. What a dutiful wife. Care so lovingly for some man who is so neglectful. Mm. Isn't she a marvel, they say. Isn't she an angel?
Absolute angel. To have cared for him after such horrors that he put her through.
After such treatment, exactly. She stuck with him. What a wonder. She manages to struggle on. She receives a little bit of aid from the church, and she does any odd job, any bit of sewing or laundry, or things like that she can, to make a few coins to keep a roof over her and her children's head. Just over a year later, tragedy strikes again.
No.
Two of Gesher's children fall ill. First one, then the other. They too succumb to terrible stomach cramps, diarrhea, vomiting. Geisha is there at the bedside when they die. Again, the neighbors gossip. What a terrible tragedy, they cry. First her husband, then two of her children. How can one woman bear so much heartache?
So I'm thinking here, which we may come back to, so obviously a woman who's been deprived of attention all of her life is suddenly getting a huge amount of sympathy when someone dies. And then all of the gossips are also going around, oh, poor you, poor you, poor you. And then if a child dies, what more attention will you receive?
Absolutely. That indeed is a theme that we may well be looking at. Only 2 months later, both of her parents suffer equally debilitating and similar symptoms. They too soon join their grandchildren in the cemetery.
Whoa, okay. This is a lot.
This is a lot. I mean, to many people in Bremen, it seems that death itself is stalking the poor Mittelburg widow.
Yes, yes, they would be right.
Taking all the family that she has. But the dignity with which she bears such suffering is remarkable.
Oh, for God's
they
sake.
Speak of her tireless devotion to her dying family, and she becomes known as the Angel of Bremen.
Okay. So everyone's going, death is stalking this family at every turn, but she's dealing with it fine. Isn't she wonderful? She's so dignified. There's no suspicion whatsoever about why everyone is dying around her.
But she is enduring such heartache. Now, it's not going to do at all to have such a noble young woman living the rest of her life as a widow.
Okay.
In fact, she has many admirers throughout Bremen who are her chasing. Who wouldn't want such a dutiful, caring, loyal wife? Stoic and so strong, who has been through so much. This is the wife I want. This is the wife for me.
Well, she seems pious and sad, and she's endured heartache, but she's struggled on. She can definitely deal with
Absolutely.
My socks, and she can deal with all of the ironing that I have. This will pale in comparison to the various tragedies that she's suffered through. The housework that I have got lined up for this bitch will be absolutely fine. Either that, or people are just stupid.
Oh, everyone's dead. She seems hard.
She soon takes up with a wine merchant by the name of Michael Christoph Gottfried. That's where her name comes from her last husband. Now, Michael Gottfried is a relatively wealthy man.
Woo-hoo.
And he dotes upon his new wife. And incredibly, luckily for her, he is there to comfort her as a mystery illness claims her third child. The last child that she has with Johann Mittelburg has now passed away.
Leave
not
the children
long
alone.
After her marriage to her second husband. Perhaps the attention of a wedding has diminished. I need something else to get people talking. I need something else needs to.
Oh yeah, because she would have had
chatting.
A wedding.
She would have had.
She would have
had
a wedding. She would have had all of that. She just is addicted to attention.
Gossiping that fades. Couple of weeks, couple of months, that fades out. It's something else to bring up the chat.
Let me kill someone. Well, let me just kill the kid.
In 1816. Her twin brother, Johann Jr., who is still very much alive at this point, returns to Bremen. He has been away in the army. He joined the army and he has been away with the army. And on his... I'm not sure where I was going with that. I mean, it's Europe. There's a war somewhere. At this point,
just
most
position
places,
people in strategic places because people are going to fight.
Yeah, exactly.
Shit is going to go down at some point.
England
that
is
going to
invade at some point. So
he's just somewhere the whole time. He has just been poised. He's very tense and stressed. Yep. He's been standing there with a machine gun going, oh, yeah, come
not
on.
Not at this point.
Has the machine gun actually been invented?
Not
no.
in 1816, yes, no.
Well, that's why he was so stressed. No one would acknowledge his machine gun. It was just made of a, you know, a normal musket. And
just like 12 turkeys strapped together.
Yes, and a rattlesnake to make the noise.
Anyway,
to poison them at the end of it.
He
so
has been away.
He's had a hell of a time.
He's had a hell of a time. And he returns to Bremen to discover both his parents dead.
Oh dear.
As we've heard before, he was very much the favoured child.
Yes, he was the favourite of the twins.
He was the favourite of the twins. He returns not only to discover that his parents are both dead and that his twin sister has not thought to write to him to let him know about this. He also finds that the small inheritance that was destined to go to him has in fact gone to her. It's claimed that, well, he couldn't be found. It was assumed he was dead. We sent the money to the sister. Next in line.
Again, this would be even better if there was not even a war on and he was on a training exercise somewhere far away.
Yeah.
That we assumed he was dead. There's nothing happening. No,
indeed.
I was literally over there.
I tripped over a log. I'm not dead. I don't think anyone tried overly hard to track him down. In an effort to bury the hatchet between the siblings, Geshe invites Johan to dinner.
Okay.
Very civilized way of airing your differences. And after a delightful meal that Geshe has prepared, a delightful meal of shellfish, by the way, which came close to being the secret ingredient, but I thought, don't want to go down that route.
Oh, no, someday I will do shellfish as an ingredient, because I do know a cocktail with shellfish in it.
Well, there we go. It wasn't today. Mm. But at this delightful meal, they reminisce about old times. They share lovely memories of their childhood. 2 days later, he's dead.
If they're reminiscing about lovely memories of their childhood, it's probably him the whole time talking about, oh, wasn't it wonderful that Mama and Papa took me to the beach and bought me ice cream and let me paddle in the sea, and she's sitting there just her nails dragging down the table going, yeah, really, really? I was tied to a donkey and told to just go and plough for my own food.
That's probably exactly what it may have been like. So he is dead, and so are all those pesky questions about the inheritance that he was due. No one's questioning that anymore.
No one's questioning his death.
No, natural. It's all entirely natural.
It was the shellfish, that was it.
It was the shellfish. Yeah. Husband number two, William Gottfried, is there throughout all of this. All of this new misery that has been visited upon Geshe. Now my own brother is dead. Woe is me. It's all very sad. But
is
rather,
he feeling nervous?
Well, if he isn't, he should be. Because rather inevitably, perhaps, Gottfried himself sickens and dies in July 1817. Less than a year after the brother's re-emergence and death, husband number two is also dead. She's
giving it a good year between to let the mourning die down.
Sympathy started to wane a bit. Need to ramp it back up again.
Well, probably the sympathy's waning a lot with her, because people probably at first were like, oh, you poor thing. Now it's just every year. Oh, another tragedy for her. Yeah, oh, sorry.
Ah, but it's not, though. People are still out there talking. So, I mean, again, Widow Gottfried now, she weeps as she follows the funeral procession down to the cemetery. Again, friends and neighbours are there. What stoicism, what grace. How could she possibly hold it all together so well? Isn't she an angel? Oh, an absolute angel. No one has been through the hardship she's has.
I mean, it's true.
Oh, yeah.
No one's questioning this whatsoever. Is there one mourner in the middle of all of this just going, I think you'll find statistically that this is wrong. Is beaten into submission. She's an angel!
Pretty much, yeah. She's an angel. Now, I mean, after so much death and trauma, surely the widow Gottfried would be left to live out the rest of her life in peace. I mean, there's no family left. Two husbands, three children, a mother, a father, a brother, all dead within 4 years. Pretty good going,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
They had a good run. And it seems that finally she is spared any further tragedy for a time. Her late husband leaves her quite a wealthy woman. Mm. And for the next few years, she lives alone in the comfortable home that she's inherited. She spends her days fashionably dressed, yet reserved. It's still in mourning, obviously.
But stylish. Mourning, but make it fashion.
Seen around town, in a coffee shop, doesn't say anything. She's there. People comment. She goes home.
That sounds great.
She is stoically bearing up and courageously dealing with the hand that fate has dealt her. However, fate tempted her.
Oh, dear.
And in 1823, Geshe's neighbour, Paul Thomas
Zimmerman
proposes marriage.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is lovely.
She's next door. It's convenient.
It's handy. They've probably seen each other on the stairs, going to buy vegetables.
Does he lean out the window or just across the corridor and just shout, will you marry me?
Will you marry me? I've got some lovely courgettes.
Look at my courgettes. A lovely bunch of coconuts.
Coconuts would have been very fancy.
That's why she married him.
Well, potentially so. And I mean, she does indeed. She gracefully accepts. But before long, before the wedding is even over, or before the wedding is even started, in fact.
Oh, God.
He too is lingering on death's door, and Geshe's caring touch gives him that little gentle nudge, a little nudge that he needs. Pokey poke, poke, through that door, off you go. At this point, Gesha resolves herself to being alone. I can't have nice things. No, it's not for me. Albeit with an inheritance and property from two husbands and a fiancé.
Just sitting there, like, clutching all of her jewels to her and all of her money, going, I've suffered so hard. I just need to be alone with all of this.
I need to be alone with all my things.
All of my lovely, lovely things. Have the wine man bring me more wine. And then leave me to my mourning and my piety.
She's only in her 30s. At this point. Ooh. And for the next few years, she attempts to maintain the comfortable, fashionable lifestyle that she has become used to. But she's no money is coming in. She's living off the inheritances. Yeah. And that money is dwindling away. Mm-hmm. Black frocks don't come cheap. And one cannot be seen in the same black frock twice.
No, of course not.
The cash is getting low.
So she's living the high life. She wants to live a society life. So she's going out and
going to the theatre in a box by herself in the theatre, nice. Sort of thing. In full mourning with a veil.
That's great. You
know, I would have come here with my husband, but he's no longer with me.
Everyone going, shh, stop saying that, please, the play is on.
Yeah. We don't want people forgetting that she's around, you see. So this money is ever dwindling. And she resorts to taking out loans on the properties that she has. She's inherited quite a number of properties. She ends up selling some, mm-hmm. taking out mortgages on others to get the cash flow going. And now her friends rally round her and do what they can to support. And in turn, when one of these elderly ladies was taken ill, it comes to no one's surprise at all that Geisha is the first on the scene to help, to nurse her dear, dear friends back to health.
Okay.
She manages to juggle her costs for a while. But things come to a head in 1825 when the creditors again begin to knock at the door. And in maybe rather a predictable fashion, this is exactly when a number of acquaintances begin to sicken and die. All the while she is by their bedsides, helping, looking up. If by chance these dear and grateful friends leave her a little something in their wills. As a thank you for all the help and support she has given. Who's to argue with that? It's a happy coincidence. It's a delightful thing from a grateful friend.
Yes, because she's tended to them and she's looked after them. And this is a time where there's a history of changing wills on your deathbed. Because you could. Just going, yes, I've Absolutely. Been here for the last week. Write me into your will, for God's sake. Well, that was lucky.
It is her neighbour and friend, Johann Rumpf, who eventually becomes suspicious.
Thank God, right.
One night in early 1827, he and a number of others are at Geisha's home for a dinner. Mm-hmm. That night, she serves a delightful fruit salad.
Oh, there it is.
Her guests.
Was that it?
That was it. That's she serves a fruit salad. What did you want?
But it's a dinner party. If you came to...
Oh, no, she has other things as well.
That's what I meant. She just came around and it was just fruit salad. Everyone would be going like, what the hell is going on?
This is the final sort of refreshing part of the meal at the end.
Even so, you'd still be annoyed. If you're in Germany, you've got some very good pastries and very good desserts out there. And if it's just at the end, I've just got fruit.
I do not know the whole menu, I must admit. The salad has been focused upon because Rumpf notices a number of oily white grains amongst the fruit and the ingredients in his bowl.
Surely it's coconut.
Oh, well, I mean, absolutely.
Well, you know, the guy brought her coconuts and...
No, you made that up in your head, I feel.
Oh, shit. I'm piecing things together that didn't happen.
A few days later, the same group of friends, again, are at Geisha's for another supper that she's throwing. She's very generous. Very generous with
very
her
generous,
hospitality. And this time, a ham dish is served.
Delicious.
With the same slightly oily white grains sprinkled.
She's not hiding it very well, is she?
Over the top. Now, Rumpf is quite suspicious about this. I mean, this ham should not have this. Fruit salad should not have this. And he is so concerned that he actually takes a sample of this to a doctor friend of his.
Good.
Now, this is during the very early days of toxicology. But Rumpf's doctor friend, I don't know his name, unfortunately, the doctor, but he is quick to identify what has been added to the food. Mouse butter.
Mouse butter? What?
Mouse butter, which sounds a lot better in German, but I'm not going to attempt it.
Go on. No, say mouse butter in a German accent.
It is animal fat and arsenic.
Yay!
That have mixed together and is used as a rat poison.
Arsenic alarm! Arsenic alarm! Arsenic alarm!
And
I have heard of mouse butter, yes.
It is incredibly common, well, throughout Europe, really. Yeah, animal fat, which I'm sure attracts rodents.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Food.
And it's got the arsenic in it. It does the trick.
Oh, she just smeared that all over the ham.
She's just sprinkled that over the ham.
And then on the
sprinkle that
fruit salad. That's just, you don't want savoury with sweet.
Pretty much over everyone she's ever met, I feel.
She just comes in and just says, how are you? Shakes the hand, rubs her hand down their face. There we are. There's the communal butter.
Toast.
There we are.
It's in your tea and your coffee. So the doctor friend reports his finding back to Rumpf, who goes to the authorities, and an investigation is quickly launched. Gesche realizes that she is under suspicion, and she manages to slip away to Hanover.
Oh, very good.
So she goes to an entirely different city.
Okay.
Which is a decent track, absolutely. Where there, she is an entirely new person. However, justice does not rest in this case.
Ew.
And she is, in fact, eventually tracked down and arrested in March 1828. In the trial that follows, the authorities demonstrate that Gesche has poisoned 16 people over the space of 15 years.
Oy.
Using mouse butter, or the German equivalent.
It doesn't sound as deadly, does it? It's just,
it doesn't sound.
It's not like going, and arsenic, she used mouse butter.
Please try it in a dramatic German accent.
Mouse butter. No, it's just still shit.
Well, there we say, let's just go arsenic and animal fat.
Yes, mouse butter.
Mouse butter.
It still doesn't sound good.
It sounds delightful. It's like something a mice would have on toast.
It would be lovely. A mouse's tea party served up with arsenic.
But she is sentenced to death.
Death!
Whereas at this time, usually, sentences were carried out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But she is actually remains under lock and key for 3 years.
Oh, okay.
Until the sentence is carried out. She is held in Bremen jail for 3 years. While she waits to die, doctors, or the equivalent at the time, question Gesche about why has she killed so many people?
Mm.
What was going through her head? Why did she do this?
Mm.
And it is believed, as we have speculated throughout this, that she is motivated by an almost pathological desire not to lose this image of a woman of substance bearing the tragedies. She cannot lose that respect and admiration she has from other people, that attention she has from other people. Nowadays we would perhaps refer to it as a Munchausen's by proxy.
Oh god,
the,
yeah,
the suffering of others.
No.
So the suffering of her children and her parents, and the attention that she gets,
oh my god,
from those tragedies. So that's how we would recognize it in today's language, perhaps. And they thought much the same. Also, they didn't have the same terms for it, but they thought much the same thing was going on. However, she did say that she regretted these murders.
Oh.
She actually claims to see the spirits of her dead family in her cell at night, and they torment her.
Ugh.
About what she has done. Which is fair enough, really.
Yeah,
if I was a spirit,
yeah,
I would be annoyed. Enough. On the 21st of April, 1831, in the square outside Bremen Cathedral, Gesche Gottfried is led onto the scaffold in front of a crowd of thousands, all baying for her death. She is placed on the guillotine. Down it comes. Her head rolls away. It is the last public execution in the city. But her crimes become legendary throughout the city and further afield for years and years and years to come. To this day, outside the cathedral where the scaffold once stood, you can find the spitting stone.
All right.
A black square set into the pavement where for almost 200 years the people of Bremen have shown their contempt for this murderess that has blighted the city for so long.
Oh my god!
That is a story.
Yay!
Of Gesche Gottfried, angel of Bremen.
Not so much an angel.
Not perhaps so much an evil.
A fallen angel. Oh my god, good story. Good story. And you can still go to Bremen now and see the spitting stone.
The spitting stone is still there outside the cathedral square where the scaffold once.
Ooh, I like stood. A monument. I like a monument of death.
And actually, people go there and spit on it, surprisingly, to show their horror at this woman. Oh. And for a woman whose goal in life was to be admired and respected and loved by anyone, to be remembered as someone who is being spat at.
Like a Lupi Velez, isn't it? Remembered for the wrong thing.
She's turning in her grave at that one,
irony, the irony of it. I love that. I love the fact that, yeah, you're absolutely right. I hadn't put that two and two together, but Munchausen's by proxy.
Mm.
That's what that was. The murdering and the killing of people around you so you have attention and that you've got basically sympathy all the time because of these sickly or dying or dead people around you. Oh, it's creepy.
And it all becomes about you. It's not about the child who's died or the husband who's died. It's all about you, the survivor.
Absolutely. And as you said, though, is the childhood story, which is terribly sad, that if you are a twin, particularly, if you're a twin and one is favoured and you are just the other child and you're never given that attention or that love that you so crave. But that's how it can manifest, parents, by the way. So, yes, give your love evenly to your children. But then to go on and that categorical need to just kill off these people. So are there any records that they suffered for a long time or was death quite quick?
It wasn't an overnight thing. It was certainly enough that people knew that the victims were ill. Probably to build up this reputation of she's sticking by her children, her husband or whatever.
Yeah.
Probably long enough that she got a reputation or people were aware that there was illness and she was dealing with it stoically.
And then sadly,
so long enough to do that.
Yeah, because she probably would have been flaunting that. That's the thing I was thinking. If they died quickly, there wouldn't be enough time for her to garner attention.
Exactly, no. So I think it was probably stretched over maybe months, certainly weeks, if not months, to garner that attention. And oh no, I can't come to tea, I've got to look after my darling husband or my dear children, can't stop and chat,
we weren't talking to you, go away. I don't know if it's at the time where you could pass off that her children were all sickly, something genetic or something quite, you know, ill with her first husband, and then all the children would succumb to the same illness.
This is the time of cholera, typhoid, all those sorts of things run rife. These are big industrial cities.
But you would have sickly families as well, where people
absolutely
would see, like,
yeah,
oh, they've had such death in their families and this is just going to spread disease back and forth and everything. But even so, I mean, we're justifying the means and the end of the lie, really. We're justifying the lie that has taken place, but clearly it's just her going, okay, fine, it's who else can I kill for attention?
Yeah, who's next?
Oh, that's quite chilling. That's a a shuddering story. As we said, there's many cases that we cover for financial gain or for some other kind of much more selfish
material reasons.
That's right, material reasons. I don't think there's any sympathy here for her,
but she's obviously a sick woman. It's not just a greed thing. It's a mental health thing.
Definitely.
As well, from her point of view as well, she is obviously very ill herself. It's not just a purely a greed thing from her. It's a physical need to have that approval, which is sad, but obviously does not condone the extreme lengths that she went to get that attention.
I'm fascinated by Munchausen by proxy cases, and there is one that we will be covering on Patreon very soon, quite a famous one. They're really interesting cases. The logic or the crazed logic that fuels these people's actions. It's just, and there's one of the earliest examples of it.
Well, indeed, yeah, absolutely.
And yet again, no one was questioning this. I know it's the time, as we said, of sickly children and sickness and people die in Germany, people die at the fair. But still, if everyone has died, if her two husbands have died and the children have died, don't lean over the banister and then ask her to marry you.
Someone did question it, though.
Eventually.
So you say that someone did question
eventually
it. Someone was suspicious.
I know, but how many people have died? 16 people are dead.
Yeah.
All these other people
around.
But if
that one person hadn't said anything, all the other people at the dinner party didn't say anything. The other guests, that's very true. They may have taken a bit poorly, nothing more of it. But he was the man who said, no, something is wrong here.
Exactly. And thank God that he did. But is it a case that those other people at the dinner party were exactly as you were talking about at the beginning of this episode, that if someone served you a salad at a dinner party, you're just going to eat it and not complain, and you would get sick and then go, it's because I had that bloody salad. And then there would be the one person at the dinner party that you'd be so annoyed at, who would go, yeah, I don't want to eat this. Sorry, there's stuff on mine. And you'd be, shut up. That's so rude. You'd all be complaining about him when he went home while vomiting and shitting yourself.
But he was the one that lived.
So next time you invite people around to your dinner party, the one person complaining, maybe they are out to save your lives. Not in my damn house, maybe. They're not.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyone complains in my house?
No one would dare.
No one would dare. Oh, good story. Love it. What do you think, people? Do you know many other cases of Munchausen by proxy? We'd love to hear about them. Not in that way. Not that we'd love to hear about them, but we might cover them on Patreon or on the main episode in the future. What do you think of fruit salad? Is that a good dish to serve at a dinner party? How do you feel if you got fruit salad as a dessert, particularly if it, you know, regardless if it was covered with arsenic or not? Is fruit an acceptable dessert? Discuss.
Could well have been that before that there was a Black Forest gateau. I don't know.
You don't know. If it was written about that there was a fruit salad in there, I think people were pretty bloody annoyed. That's it.
Perhaps that was the only thing.
Probably because everyone was talking about it. They were saying, well, we have a lot of evidence that a fruit salad was served at a dinner party because no one is happy. Yeah, burn the bitch. Yeah, behead her. She served fruit as a dessert.
So let us know what you think. And if you do, in fact, have a banana liqueur lurking in the back of your cupboard, then by all means, the recipe for the fruit salad cocktail will be up on Friday. I'd be very interested to know what you think. Do you have other recipes? I've got a whole bottle of banana liqueur sitting in the cupboard now. I need other things to do with it. Any ideas? I'm very grateful for them. And I shall experiment on them with Sinead. I shall experiment with them on Sinead.
That's no better in my case. What?
Well, it works for me.
It works for you.
Because they could be dreadful, and then you can have them.
Yeah, send us suggestions. Send us combinations. They don't actually have to be a normal cocktail, but things that you think will work. Don't just put milk in it. Don't put chartreuse in it. Don't do that. It won't. This is one where chartreuse will not work. But send us your combinations. We'll try and mix something up with it. Come and talk to us on social media as ever. Send us suggestions of more stories, things you want us to do on Patreon if you are a subscriber. And if you're not already a Patreon subscriber,
then why aren't you?
Indeed.
Tell me. Explain yourselves.
And we must say, it makes a great Christmas gift.
It does.
You can buy a monthly subscription. You can buy an annual subscription at the moment. They'll have all of the back catalogue, get new episodes every single month. And if they don't like it, they can just cancel rather than having the shame of shuffling back to a shop with a receipt. But they're never going to do that because we're fabulous. And they're going to want to hear more. Once you hear a little taste of the poisonous cabinet, you can't stop. So guys, next episode comes out on Christmas Day.
That's mad. It's to think that the next episode is actually Christmas Day is quite bizarre.
Deck the halls with
I hope we have something suitably festively deadly for you on Christmas Day.
There will be a Christmas Day episode, 100%. We are going to record it in advance. We're not going to do it live, much as we'd like to, because we will be drunk. I promise you.
Be drunk, absolutely.
Listen to it with your family. They will be terrified. Listen to it, enjoy it. If you need to escape from your family or your loved ones, just put your headphones on, enjoy our lovely Christmas Day episode. Anything in particular you want to hear from us for Christmas, send us suggestions. We've still got time.
Always time.
Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisoner's cabinet. We will see you next week for Christmas Day. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Bye.